Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This was recorded live at DFTB 19. If you enjoy this podcast, you can find all our back catalogue available on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy!
Next up we have Hazel. And Hazel works for Embrace, which is the intensive care transport service for children and babies in Yorkshire and Humber. And her special interests are neonates and netball, but I'm hoping not at the same time.
Thanks very much for coming. I am properly going to talk about neonates. I'm going to talk about neonatology and the neonatal unit. So this is the princess and the pea. This is the, if I think of an image of the princess and the pea, this is the image that I remember from my childhood. This is by Edward Delac in 1911, but Hans Christian Andersen wrote The Princess and the Pea in about 1835. And the importance of the princess and the pea. There's lots of other morals, if you want to go into the depth of the princess and the pea, is that this tiny thing made a huge difference. There were 20 mattresses. Now, we're probably not all staying at home this week. I really appreciate my own mattress. But through 20 mattresses, the princess felt the pea. So this one little pea had a dramatic effect. And it meant that she could marry a real prince. So what are we going to talk about? Well, for the keen cyclists amongst the room, I've seen a few nodding heads. You know who this bloke is? This bloke is phenomenal. This is Dave Brailsford. He is used to be the director of cycling for Team GB, and he's probably credited for the phenomenal success of the GB cycling. 100 years went by nearly before GB cycling. We had a cyclist in the Tour de France that won anything. And this is Dave Brailsford. And what he did is he did something quite clever, which has been taken from sport into other areas. And forgive me for the people who have heard about what he did. So he was a cyclist. He cycled amateur in Europe for a couple of years. Then he did a degree in something sporty. And then he went to Sheffield Hallam University and he did a business administration master's, an MBA. And I love this. One, get your MBA. Two, take over the world, which is exactly what he did. And he took some of the ideas that he learned from economics and took it through into cycling. And one of the things that I think he might have been thinking about is the law of increasing returns. So any economics students in the room? Law of increasing returns. It's the only thing I had to write down because it's a law and I didn't want to get it wrong. So for every additional investment of capital or labour, it yields more return than the proportionate investment. Or for you and me, this isn't the more you put in, the more you get out, jolly, jolly. This is the more you put in, you get even more out. That's the law of increasing returns. And this is what Dave Brailsford did. He did marginal gains. He broke everything down into little portions and thought, I'm going to increase that. I'm going to make that better by just 1%. And then when I aggregate all that together, all those marginal gains together, I'm going to make it even better. And this then takes us on to the power of tiny gains. So if you make something better by 1% every day, actually the gain that you get over time is much more because you're building on good decisions. And this is what we need to do in neonatology. And this is what I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, are the small gains in neonatology. So if there are any scholars in the room or Royal College trainees, this is a Japanese symbol for change for good, also known as the bane of most trainees' life, Kaizen. And it's change for good, and it's the constant improvement. So what constant improvement can we make for tiny gains in neonatology? Brackets, my opinion, all my opinions, okay? Now, as I was putting this talk together, I discovered this document, and actually, thankfully, me and the World Health Organization agree. So I could have just left this out and gone, ta-da, I've had all these amazing ideas. This is what I think is going to make a big difference. But actually, the World Health Organization put this together. It's taken them 2 or 3 years to do it. They produced the first summary and have published it, which is 20 pages long. And there will be links to a lot of these in later on, and we're going to put them on Trello as well. And Survive and Thrive is about neonatal care. So they've produced the summary document, 20 pages. At some point, they will publish the full document, 162 pages. I haven't read it. I have read the summary document. You can get both, but it's still not been properly published. And what they did is they looked at 5 key goals and 5 key areas. And these are surviving, thriving, transforming, fairly investing, and counting. So in worldwide, 2.5 million babies die. And these are from preventable causes, so prematurity, conditions at birth, infections, and lack of access to care or poor care. So they want these babies to survive. And when they do survive, they want them to thrive. 3.5 million babies across the world need specialised or intensive care. And they want the access to that to be good. They want these babies to thrive. These babies will survive if they get access to specialist care. And they want to see more training and recruitment and retention of nurses in order for these babies to thrive. They want to transform services across the world. This isn't just a paper for low-income or middle-income countries. This is about transforming services in high-income countries as well. And they want to make sure that we are focusing, that we are transforming. We're looking at technologies that work locally, not just in London or Germany or Australia, but in Africa and Colombia and places like that. The technologies we develop, we transform, are going to have to work locally to make the neonatal care better. And they want us to empower parents. That's capitals, all capitals, empower. Because they feel, from what the work that they've done, that empowering parents to work in partnership with us across the globe is going to change neonatal care. They want us to invest fairly. They talk a lot about humanitarian areas and that these areas have equal access to neonatal care. And they want us to invest fairly and to protect that investment. And that is a massive challenge. It looks great in writing, but how are we going to turn that into reality? And importantly, they want us to count. So the older I get as a consultant, the more I realise how important our data is and how clean our data is, but that our data is across everything. There's no point missing out huge swathes of your population, whether that's globally, nationally, regionally. You've got to collect good data and you've got to use the data to make people accountable. And this is what the World Health Organization say. So the first thing where I think we're going to get marginal gains in neonatology is in public health. These are tiny things that we as paediatricians, as doctors, EM people, you've already talked about it in the conference, we have a responsibility not to send our neonates back into the environment that made them the neonates that they are. So we have to work on public health issues. We have to work on smoking. We have to work on illicit drug use. You're much more likely to have a premature baby if there's illicit drug use. If you are obese, as someone who is working very hard on her netball to not be obese, I know how hard it is, but we have a responsibility to make our population healthy, our adolescents. Domestic violence, there's a massive link with domestic violence and prematurity. And we're not talking about kitchen sink domestic violence here. I'm talking about global domestic violence as well. There's a massive link with prematurity. And two other things, and this is where we have to work culturally on the norms. It is not normal to have your first babies at 50. So although Hello and OK and Tatler think it's OK for Holly Hunter to have her twins at 50, this is not normal and it's not healthy. And it's not OK to have a teenage pregnancy either. You're much more likely to have a premature baby if you're a teen mother or if you have a baby after 35, which is a massive challenge in my area because many, many of my colleagues get their consultants post and then have their babies and they are over 35. So this is where we have to have a little voice, and sometimes it's hard having that kind of voice. So the other thing that I think we have a chance to make marginal gains in is kangaroo care. It is so simple. This is skin to skin. This started in Colombia in the late 1970s. If you're from an ED background and you want to learn something, put the baby on the mother. Okay, there's great, great studies, again, links will come later, about how these babies regulate their heart rate, their oxygenation is better. If you do skin to skin, you initiate breastfeeding 2.5 days earlier than if you didn't. And that will take me really nicely onto my next, which is breastfeeding. I actually couldn't find a picture of a baby breastfeeding that actually showed a breast. We have a responsibility to make breastfeeding normal, to stop hiding mothers under cloths and things like that. It's normal. But breastfeeding is massively important. If you get your own mother's milk, you decrease the risk of NEC, which is a massive killer, retinopathy of prematurity, your lungs are better, your hospital stay is decreased, you bond with your mothers. And back to skin, bonding with your mother is a massive, massive thing. Skin to skin with your father, bonding, massive. You have it will affect the baby when it goes home because they'll be bonding and nurturing and these babies will thrive. They will thrive in an environment where they have bonded with their parents. And this is massively important that we don't just shut the doors of the neonatal unit and send them off, that we work at their family right at the beginning. And skin to skin and breastfeeding is one of them. I don't know where this figure came from. It's in one of the references that I've got. But if in England alone, all babies on the neonatal unit got their own mother's milk, the NHS would save £45 million. £45 million from something that's free. So we just have to work on culture. This is a small marginal gain. And then this is the next thing. It's family-centred care, and it links to kangaroo care, it links to breastfeeding and own mother's milk. Family-centred care is quite a new concept. And it's really filtering through. And the World Health Organization want us to do this, to work in partnership, to empower our families to look after their babies, to stop the incubator separating them from their babies. Family integrated care, looking after your baby, feeling empowered, you get less depressive symptoms when you go home. It's massively important, and it is innovative, and it will save money because you'll go home earlier and you can spend that money looking after another baby. And so family integrated care is a massively important thing, and it's so simple and it's such a small step. But if you add it together with kangaroo care and breastfeeding, it really is going to make your marginal gains aggregate. So just changing tack a little bit, one of the things that we're going to see in the future is problems with antibiotics. For my colleagues that work in Asia and in that area of the world, there is a massive problem with antibiotic resistance. But small steps for these small babies and small improvements are going to make a difference. If you just have a guideline for your infection control, you will be better and your babies will be protected. Even if your guideline is rubbish, just having an infection control guideline will make you better because you'll be thinking about it. So protecting these babies, looking after them, giving them a good environment, back to your own mother's breast milk, is a small thing. But then you add something like checklists. So you have a checklist whenever you put a central line in and you stick to it. These are small areas that are going to add up to make our babies' lives better. And then we'll have less antibiotics, and then we'll have less antibiotic resistance, or we'll only be using antibiotics when we really need them. And then finally, a little bit controversially, one of the things where I think we'll see marginal gains is in high flow. So high flow humidified nasal cannulae oxygen. I just prefer high flow myself. As you can see, this allows the baby to have so much more access to the baby. So there's not a huge amount of evidence whether high flow is better than CPAP or CPAP better than high flow and when we should use it. We just don't know. But what we do know is it's easier to nurse and the parents can have access. So a small gain from using high flow is that the parents can get closer to their baby. So they can do skin to skin. So they can initiate breastfeeding or producing breast milk. This is just a tiny thing. And delayed cord clamping. It's coming, it's free. You get less NEC and you get less IVHs. Why wouldn't you do it? Such a small thing. So back to the World Health Organization. This is the summary of Survive and Thrive. Skin-to-skin contact, looking after our medicines, our infection control, exclusive breastfeeding, having access to skilled people, well-equipped units. This is what's important. Working in partnership with our families. This is what's important. It's building confidence so they can take them home into a really good environment. And just this constant contact between parents, we mustn't forget that. It's such a small thing, but it's going to have a massive difference in the long term. So, it's just little peas, but they're going to make a huge difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Hazel. That was fab.
You want me to stay here?
Anything coming through on Twitter, Alice?
I think everyone's just been processing all the wonderful information that we've got, so I'm sure more will come through, but not yet.
Okay. Any questions in the room?
You're not allowed to ask a question.
Going back a few years, I can remember like 12 and 13-year-olds were pregnant and coming into NICU, but I don't really think I've seen that many, you know, like teenagers pregnant anymore. What's changed?
I honestly don't know, James. I don't know what has changed. I think some areas are seeing more teenage pregnancies than others. And actually, I think that some of the thing about teenagers is that they are having term babies because our nutrition is better than it ever has been. Although it's not that good, it's not that balanced, but our nutrition is better, so these babies are going to term. But globally, there's a lot of teenage mothers. And I think we still have a look. If you look at our teenage pregnancy rate compared to somewhere like Finland, we still have a long way to go.
I'm coming.
Great talk. Totally agree with everything you've said.
So did the World Health Organization, thankfully.
Yeah. In my experience, neonatal units are extraordinarily parochial and extraordinarily invested in their own ways of doing things, which I guess is one of the reasons why they're quite resistant to change. What's your thoughts on getting more uniformity of practice amongst different neonatal units? Certainly in New Zealand, we have widely different ways of doing things between the different units because people feel so invested within their own units.
Yeah. And I can see that because in the region that I work in, we serve the whole of Yorkshire and Humber. So there's about 1.1 million children in Yorkshire and Humber, 5.5 million adults, and we have a birth rate of about 80,000. And we have quite a few units. We have 4 tertiary units in our area. And one of our units is massively into family integrated care. And another of our units is massively into infection control. And we have operational delivery networks in the UK. And as an operational delivery network, one of the things that we're trying to do is to share ideas of quality improvement across all the units and to share even tiny quality improvement ideas. So one of the big things that is sort of sweeping across the UK at the moment is wearing a different coloured hat when you're a postnatal baby, depending on the risk of you getting an infection or signs of an infection, so the traffic light system. So if everything's all right, you get a green hat, and if you need a little bit of a watch, you get a yellow knitted hat, and if you need a really close watch on and you need really good obs, you get a red one. And I can see that spreading between the units. So I think uniformities on a regional level will happen through our operational delivery networks. And then there's the BAPM guidelines, where people will hopefully be following BAPM guidelines. And then in the UK, there's NICE guidelines. And as somebody mentioned earlier, if you don't follow the NICE guideline, your trust has to say why. Why aren't you following it? Why have you deflected from it? So I think NICE guidelines in the UK. But I think sharing your quality improvement ideas, you know, not being sort of secretive about it, thinking, right, what is the best for babies, and sharing your ideas, I think that would be, if we were a little less protective of our ideas. All I want is a hat tip, you know. If somebody's got a good idea, just say that idea came from that person and we've run with it. Like guidelines, people keep inventing guidelines and they're just somebody else's guideline from a while ago.
I think you're completely right. We're very bad at shouting about what we do well, aren't we? I think.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
How are you going? I'll frame my comment as a question. I think it is incredibly difficult to to get different units to do different things. But I think one of the most difficult things is proving that your what your unit does actually works better than any what any other unit does. And I wonder if you have any comments as to what you use to prove that what you do is any better than anyone else.
So you use data and dashboards. It's as simple as that. And you have an open and honest conversation about your dashboard. So if anybody wants to look at the All Yorkshire and Humber ODN dashboard, you can. It's available if you know where to look for it. And we compare whether or not you were born at 27 weeks. You know, we call it an exception. If you're born at 27 weeks in a local neonatal unit, you should have been born in the intensive care unit. So we look at that. We look at temperature at admission. We look at over hyperthermic babies at admission. We look at term admissions. So, you know, we think the term baby shouldn't be admitted. So we use a dashboard and we use that to hold the units accountable. It's difficult because you need to then use that as a push to share ideas. And I think that's what's very in its infancy. Like you say, you have to use data to prove that what you're doing is the right thing. And the problem is there's a lot of P's in the system. So you might have low catheter line associated infections in one unit, and they may share their idea for what they think has made the difference, but actually what's made the difference is maybe the way that the room is set out and where the sinks are, not necessarily their policy. So it's about looking at everything. Well, I think it's a massive challenge. I mean, globally, if I said, you know, in Yorkshire and Humber, we do this really well, so I'm going to come over to Sydney and share it with you, I'm not sure how well that would go down.
Any more questions?
Quick one, and a bit different to the previous questions. I was going to ask about probiotics, which you didn't talk about specifically, but in terms of implementing something new, that's, for me, a glaring example of something that's been shown years and years ago to have such benefits and why it's been so hard to bring in.
I think what's been hard to bring in is uniformity. And I can tell you the UK story. In the UK, a lot of units went, right, we're going to go for it. And then that brand that they went for became unavailable. So it's the same in Bristol. And then everybody was like, well, what do we do now? We've decided we're going to go for this brand and it's not available. So there was a vacuum. In the UK, I think most tertiary units are using some kind of probiotic. But like you say, we sort of touched on earlier, it's about sharing that. And because that wasn't sort of like a little P for me, probiotics. I mean, I could have talked about steroids and magnesium sulfate, but those were big events. These are little tiny things that will just take us that extra millimetre.
Anything on Twitter, Alice?
No, I think we're all checking.
Anything else from the room? Okay.
Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This was recorded live at DFTB 19. If you enjoy this podcast, you can find all our back catalogue available on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy!